Is Jackson Arnold a top 10 SEC quarterback? What does Jani have to do to get a statue? And what is the biggest threat left on the rest of the basketball schedule? It's time for another Barn takeover.
In the world full of podcasts, he's the undisputed heavyweight champion of hot takes, an Auburn sports homer, master of the book, and message board legend. Get your buttons buttoned and your hats flattened, because the Top Button Podcast is about to kick off, and you don't want to miss your courtside seat. Now, here's your host, Charlie Five.
Yes, sir, we're back. It's another episode of the Top Button Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Rush, a.k.a. Charlie Five, and we're ready to get after it. Happy Thursday. It's time for another Barn takeover. We're members of the barnauburn.com. Control the show. They control all the content of the show. We put the mailbag up on Wednesdays. They fill it up with questions, and then we dive into it. Go one by one and try to get as much as we can answered in the show. And typically it's some really good stuff. So we're going to jump into that in just a second. But before we do that, we got to give a shout out to Uncle Keith's Red Sauce. Make sure to go to UncleKeith'sRedSauce.com. Use coupon code TheBarn25 to save 25%. I love buying stuff from Auburn families. I love buying stuff from Auburn folks. This is a great Auburn family. Live literally like 1 mile from my house. They live right here in Auburn. And so you can show them some love. If you love salsa, but you're tired of the same old store-bought salsa, this is the way to go. Uncle Keith's Red Sauce, they got mild, they got spicy. You can get it in any Publix in the state of Alabama. If you live in Auburn, you just about can't turn around without finding some. Or you could go to UncleKeith'sRedSauce.com, save big, and you can buy a little bit more at once and then save even more just off of the per jar, and then save 25% on top of that. So locally made, no additives, no preservatives, great flavor, just salsa with a little bit of a southern kick to it. So check them out. Show them some love. Uncle Keith's Red Sauce. It's good, y'all. All right, without further ado, let's dive straight in. This first one's a really good one. I think it'd be a great topic for discussion in general. Rhett Lashley Burner, where does Auburn's quarterback rank, in your opinion, compared to other SEC schools? And could Arnold make a splash in the 2026 draft with a breakout season? So it's tough. Really, you got to look at returning quarterbacks in a bucket. And then do you think Jackson Arnold can be better than those guys? It really depends on what your criteria is. And I think I got to put some of the guys that played last year and had some success ahead just because of that particular, you know, reason, because they've already had some success. And anything you're projecting with Jackson Arnold is just that. It's a projection. So, look, I definitely have to put Lenora Sellers ahead. Okay, so that's one. I'd have to put, let's see, Lenora Sellers, DJ Lagway, I don't know about Arch yet. Probably put Arch Manning ahead. John Mateer for sure. Nico, I'm not even going to attempt to say his last name. Garrett Nussmeier, I think I'd probably put him above Jackson right now. Diego Pavia, at times he's been a killer. I know statistically he's not just like a stat favorite, but I'd still probably put him above at this point in time, and maybe Talen Green from Arkansas. So what's that? That would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So I'd put him, I think, comfortably in the top 10. Like, what does Ty Thompson look like in Alabama? You know, after Jalen Milroe, what does Ty Thompson look like? There's some other guys that have come in. But I think he's be comfortably in the top 10 just based off of his ranking, based off of his potential, based off of his tools, and then in the system. And then I think a lot of folks in the sporting world, in college football world, really think a lot of Jackson Arnold and understand the situation that he was in last year and don't hold it completely against him. So I think comfortably top 10, maybe looking at nine or 10 at this point in time. Now, the second half of it, could Arnold make a splash in the 2026 draft? I haven't really broken down the 2026 draft class for quarterbacks. I know the 2025 class was really bad. So I'm wondering, I'm not really 100% sure what that 2026 draft class looks like. It would have to be a pretty big season. It would have to be a very, very big season from a statistical standpoint, accuracy. Like, he would have to have a monster season. Like, I mean, he would have to throw for a pile of touchdowns and lead Auburn to, you know, some type of postseason, whether it be playoffs or, you know, 10 plus wins and in a bowl game. I don't know exactly what it is, but he would have to win a bunch of games and have a big, big season for this year to be a one and done. He's probably going to be here 2 years, even if he has a good year this year. That's just tough. It's tough when you go from what you were what your production was last year to this year. Now, it's been done. Joe Burrow did it. He had a, you know, not very spectacular season, and then he had the best season that's probably one of the better seasons ever for a college quarterback, and he was drafted. So I guess if you have something along the lines of a Joe Burrow-esque season, it could possibly happen, but that's probably it would be tough. I would imagine he's going to be here 2 years. D. Moultrie, this is a great question. Who's the better developer of talent, Bruce Pearl or Hugh Freeze? When I hear the term developer of talent, automatically I'm going to give more credit to the guy who takes the lower ranked person and does the most with them. The thing is, both of these guys have done that. I mean, if you look at the team that now basketball is a little bit different because there's a lot of good players all across the country, and you can get guys in the portal now that weren't necessarily highly ranked out of high school. Football's just a little bit different. But both of them have done a lot with not a lot. And both of them have ended up getting big-time guys and done well with them. I'm trying to think who I would give the nod to. What Bruce has done at Auburn has been, I would say, a little bit more impressive than what Hugh has done from a talent development standpoint at Ole Miss, because I think Bruce doesn't have quite the I'm trying to think of the best word to describe this. Like, look, we love basketball. Okay, I love basketball, but we're a football school. People will give more to football than they will to basketball. That doesn't mean that we're broke. That doesn't mean that we're not going to be competitive. But, like, we may not just have the money to go get a team full of McDonald's All-Americans. Now, we've gotten some here or there. You got Tahad Pettiford. You got Aiden Holloway. You've gotten guys like Jabari Smith. Like, you've gotten guys like that. But for the most part, it's a lot of development. It's a lot of evaluation. And you get guys that have stay in the program for a long time and end up being good college basketball players. Maybe not a ton of dudes that are going to go play in the NBA, even though you've gotten those, but just good college players. And then Hugh has always recruited at a really high level. He has had the success stories. I mean, you look at the quarterbacks that he's had a ton of success with, but Hugh goes and gets, you know, top rated kids and turns them into, you know, not necessarily turns them into stars, but like helps them reach their potential, I guess, of already being really good athletes. So I think I'd give the nod to Bruce, but they're very similar. Both, if you really think about their careers and you know, everything they've done, they're really similar. They're in so many aspects. I'm hoping last year was Hugh's Bruce year two. If you remember Bruce's year two, I hope last year was sort of the year two that similar to what Bruce had. where maybe you're kind of laying the foundation, playing a lot of young guys, not have the wins on the board, but you do feel like you're getting better as a program, and then you just sort of naturally take off from there. They're so similar to me. Good question. I would give the nod to Bruce Pearl. Is the Baylor game the most important slash biggest game on the schedule momentum-wise? You can look at the schedule in general and just say you can pick out games here or there that you can say the most important. But I do think the Baylor game is the most important game of the season, and it's because of the very reason you put in parentheses, momentum. You're coming right out of the gate off of a sort of a tumultuous season. It is going on the road. Road games are always tough, but I can just think of the trajectory of the season and the fan base and the toxicity it got at times last year. And then just the confidence in the team and everybody. I think it's the most important game of the year. I agree. I think that you win this game, you feel so much better about the trajectory of the season from a player standpoint and from a fan standpoint. You lose that game, and like, man, you just have to, because Baylor's like one of those middle of the road, type programs, type teams. And if you can't beat them, how are you going to compete in the SEC? And it just sort of sets up that's one game out of 12. So that just sets up 11 more games that you don't feel super confident in. I think it's a huge game for Hugh Freeze, for this Auburn program under Hugh Freeze. I think it's massive. And I hope we're treating it as so, which I think we will be. Which will be a bigger blow? This is a great question. This is like telling me to pick a favorite kid. which would be a bigger blow, losing Kenyatta or losing Will Redmond? Or would they be willing to be co-GMs? All right, so first part of the question. Who would I – if you're not asking me to pick one to lose, but you're asking which one would be the bigger blow. I honestly think – it will be Will Redmond. And the only reason that I think it will be Will Redmond is because Will Redmond is sort of the architect of this whole system. He is the puppet master, so to speak. The guy that sort of – it's his plan. It's his system. And then Kenyatta is sort of like the head dog that goes out and executes the system. Now, I'm not saying that Kenyatta could not also play that role, but there would be a learning curve there, okay? Because it's not just recruiting one guy. It's the whole plan. It's the whole plan from the NIL aspect of it. If you want to call it a salary cap, it's that part of it. It's the scouting part of it in the portal, running that team, that when kids go in the portal, you got a group of guys that are able to get eyes on them. And honestly, you maybe have sort of pinpointed some high potential targets that could enter the portal. Not necessarily saying you reached out or talked to them, but agents talk, agents call. So like, there, you probably have some information on some guys that could probably go in the portal. So you're scouting on your end. Like, it's way more than just, hey, Deuce Knight's coming in. That's your guy. Don't let him out of your sight. Lock him up. And you're calling those guys over and over and over again. There's a huge gap in responsibilities. So I'm not saying that Kenyatta can't do those things, but I'm saying that you lose Will, you have to completely, it's a huge, huge hole that you have to fill. Kenyatta would be really, really tough to fill. Cause I don't think there's a guy out there that can have the impact and the sway one-on-one with recruits like Kenyatta that's not an on-the-field coach. I mean, it should be tough to find them. So if I had to pick, I'd say Will Redmond would be the biggest loss. Both of them would hurt really, really bad. I don't think they'll ever be co-GMs. But I think Kenyatta could come be to where he could get to the point where he's sort of over that, maybe over the high school portion of it. You know, if you have, if it's a two arm deal where you got portal and you got high school, or maybe it gets to the point where he's, he could be sort of like the next step down over right under Will Redmond. I don't think they'll ever be co GMs. I don't know that that makes a lot of sense for either one of them. So, but he can rise through the position ranks in that off the field, that off the field world where they make up positions seemingly as the days go by. Barner three, did we ever get an update on Xavier Chaplin's injury? Would put a damper on the whole offseason if he's out an extended amount of time. If you remember at thebarnauburn.com, we talked about how we thought we had gotten some information that Xavier Chaplin had some sort of arm/shoulder injury, and we weren't sure exactly how serious it was. I don't think it's serious in the aspect of it should threaten the season at all. And I think the coaches were aware of something. So I think it involves his shoulder, and he may miss some of spring, may miss all of spring. We'll have to see, but I don't think it's anything serious. I think he's going to be fine. It's nothing that's going to linger into fall camp, nothing that'll linger into the season. It may just be unfortunate that he misses a little bit of spring practice, kind of gelling with the team. But on the flip side, it'll give some younger guys some more a more chance to develop. And as long as Xavier's doing the things he's supposed to be doing, rehab and sort of getting making sure he's in shape, he should be fine. He's played a lot of football. Intelligent guy, shouldn't be that hard to pick it up. I wouldn't worry about him. Definitely not a huge threat for the season to have issues. This is such a fun question. Toxic Auburn. Which AU football players were tampered with the most? I've been trying to think the best way to answer this one. So I'm just going to say it. I think the one that was tampered with the most, I think it's like one, and then the rest are kind of probably all about the same. But one guy that was tampered with the most was Malcolm Simmons. And it happened right close around the time when Auburn was talking with Eric Singleton. When Auburn was connected with Eric Singleton, the Sharks came after Malcolm Simmons. I think they probably came after a lot of the guys, but I think Malcolm Simmons was the one that maybe they felt was the most gettable. And I think Auburn had to, Auburn had to work on that one. Auburn had to make sure that he was comfortable. I mean, it is sort of tough when you're a guy who you feel like you can be a playmaker at wide receiver. You look and Auburn's trying to bring in a guy that's probably going to take some snaps away from you, maybe take some targets away from you, and you think you're just as good. Now, you can't go into a season with five wide receivers, so you got to have a little bit of common sense, which I ended up winning over. You got to have a little common sense to understand that Auburn can't go into a season with the number of guys in that room that they had. They had to add some guys, even if it was just to add some guys, add some quality depth. You just so happen to be able to have a connection and be able to get the number one wide receiver in the whole portal. For a long time, the number one player in the portal. So after that, obviously you got Amaris Williams, who went into the portal and then we saved, but by far, the one we're probably closest to maybe losing, closest to losing or closest to going into the portal without actually going to the portal because of people tampering, it was Malcolm Simmons, and Florida was a big, big one. Florida won them bad. So that goes to show you Auburn is able to withstand those storms when they come. They got the infrastructure in to be able to withstand those storms. And you're able to keep him. And that, again, that's the theme of this offseason seems to be retention. So that was a good one. Good question, Toxic Auburn. Has Janai done enough to get a statue outside of Neville? If not, what does he have to do to guarantee it? It's really hard. Football has a very easy criteria. Basically, you get a Heisman and you're going to get a statue. You got Cam, you got Bo Jackson, you got Pat Sullivan. If you get a Heisman, you're going to have a statue outside. Baseball and basketball, it's been strange because it's not strange. It's their pro careers have had a lot to do with it. Obviously, Charles Barkley is one of the greatest players of all time. Frank Thomas, Hall of Fame, one of the greatest Major League Baseball players of all time, one of the greatest home run hitters of all time. So I don't know. I don't know what Janai. I feel like if you use the same criteria of football, if you were to win the Player of the Year, you know, win the Wooden Award, whatever it is, if you can win the Heisman level awards, and then you can go deep in the tournament. Maybe if you can win a national championship, maybe that could be something that could solidify it. But it does feel like pro career for those sports has a lot to do with it. Pat Sullivan did not have like an incredible pro career. Bo Jackson obviously did what he did. Cam Newton did what he did, NFL MVP. Frank Thomas, Hall of Fame. Charles Barkley, again, one of the best ever. It feels like pro career is going to have to weigh into it some. It's not like the statue would be put out there like next year. It'd be a while. So I think you'd probably have to win a national championship and you'd have to win one of the big postseason awards. And then I think he could probably get a statue. Now, jersey in the rafters, I think that's probably going to be a given. I don't know if you retire it, but you definitely hang four in the rafters, like without a doubt. Like that's got to go. That's got to get up there for sure. Which team left on the schedule is the toughest matchup scheme-wise? Admittedly, I've been trying to think about what is the – like if I'm going to defend Auburn or I'm going to try to score on Auburn. I'm going to try to play Auburn. What do I do? And it's so hard because if you slow the game down, they can beat you. If you try to make it ugly, they can beat you. If you try to run with them, they can beat you. So you look at the Duke game and you look at the Florida game. And to me, the common denominator is less about scheme. And honestly, it's more about size, physicality, and then being able to shoot three-pointers. So I don't know enough about a scheme to tell you that from an X's and O's standpoint, which one of these teams has the better scheme to frustrate Auburn. I just feel like Kentucky is a really good three-point shooting team. They play pretty good defense at times. They're physical. I think that would probably be the worst matchup out of what's left. Texas A&M also has – they don't have, like, the big bigs, but they got, like, three or four guys that play a bunch of minutes that are 6'8", 6'9", you know, that are very, very physical. They can maybe – make things a little bit frustrating on the road. But I would say Kentucky's probably the worst matchup. They shoot close to 40% from three. I mean, they shoot 38% from three. They got some size, you know, they got some really big guys. And they got some longer guards too. I mean, they got a 7-footer that averages 10 and 8. That's going to be tough. You saw Janai struggle a little bit with, the big man from Arkansas, so, you know, the close to 7-footer. So I think Kentucky, for sure, worst matchup of what's left. It's pretty much a given that Cooper Flagg is going to win the Wooden Award. What has to happen for Broome to win it over him? I would think Duke would need to drop another game or two. They've anointed him, man. I don't know what – I think, honestly, we'd probably have to win the national championship. or beat Duke in the tournament at some point in time, and Janai continue to just have a double-double every single game. It's unfortunate because Cooper's running through. He's not a bad player. I'm not acting like he's a scrub, but he's running through just complete trash competition. And Janai's having similar numbers against the best conference that there's ever been. Like the best conference as a whole, not the best. Again, I say this often, but not the best SEC ever, the best conference ever. But they've anointed Cooper. You basically have to win the SEC championship and probably win the national championship or go to the Final Four, and Broome just keep going off, and especially go off in the tournament for him to be even considered. Hypothetical time at this point in time, at this moment, Duke versus Auburn rematch on a neutral court. Who are you taking? If the game was played like Saturday, I'd probably take Duke. I feel like we're still a little bit gassed and a little bit banged up. We need a breather at some point in time. But if it's in March, if it's in the tournament, I take Auburn. I mean, we'd probably be about a pick 'em betting wise. I think I'd take Auburn in that matchup. That's another one of those tough matchups for Auburn, though. You got good guards, you can shoot threes, and you got some big guys that can make plays. That one could be that's a real, I mean, they're the most similar to Auburn to me. Them and Florida are the most similar to Auburn as a whole. And I think that's why you see the matchup that's, tough between both of them. Great show, guys. Great questions. You can be a part of it. You can sign up for thebarnauburn.com. You can take $25 off your annual membership, and you can jump in the action as well. Love to feature you on the show. Love to meet you in general, and hang out with you at the barn, hang out in the game threads, hang out in just a regular conversation. Got a lot of information, team news, recruiting news, all that good stuff. And it's a fun community to be a part of as well. So definitely check it out and jump in the fun. Guys, I really appreciate it. We'll be back again tomorrow. It's another episode of the Top Button Podcast. Stay buttoned.
Thanks for listening, and drive home safely.